Gopi Jana Balabha Girivada Dadi
Gopi Jana Balabha
Girivada Dadi Jasodanandana Braja Janarandana Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Hiravana Chadi Jamuna Hiravana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Jana Balabha Girivada Dadi
Gopi Jana Balabha
Gopi Jana Balabha Girivada Dadi Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Jamana Tira Vanachadi Jamuna Tira Vana Chadi Jaya Radha Madhava Punjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivijakacharya Astatarasata Sri Srimad His Divine Grace is the Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Korpimanandi. We're right on time. 12:15. So are you up to speed with the topics that we've been covering other than the morning class? Yes? Canto 10, Chapter 8? Yes? I'm looking at your mother and she's...
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Okay, so... what our acharyas say is true. And that is the childhood pastimes of Krishna are especially very sweet in more ways than one. Particularly with regard to parental affection. And our acharyas take the opportunity to explain different verses, how their examples of what Rupa Goswami teaches in nectar devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu the different types of bhavas, and this stimulates that type of bhava, and something else stimulates another type of bhava, and it's embedded within the pastimes. Like, for example, we'll hear how the little toddler Krishna toddled, and as he was toddling, he and Balaram were moving across the ground that was had cow urine and cow dung and dust from the cows, and their bodies became covered with cow urine and cow dung that was like cosmetics. And, you know, in one sense, it just sounds like village life. But in the rasa sense, it's for the Vatsalya rasa residents of Braja, it's stimulations of their ecstatic love, their udipans, stimulations of ecstatic love towards their parental affection. And those of us that aren't in Braja, but we're in Chicago, we're hearing these pastimes that also stimulate, and by that stimulation, attraction goes to Krishna. I mean, we're not at the stage of feeling the transcendental emotions of the residents of Braja, but our attraction for Krishna is being stimulated just by hearing. And at least during the hearing process, to the degree to which we can be absorbed in hearing, then the distractions of the mind subside, and a peaceful experience that's our natural state can, at least for a little while, be something that we connect with and experience a happiness that's not a happiness of sense gratification or aversion to the pain and misery of material existence, but it's in another platform altogether. Even for neophyte persons, such experience can be theirs. Same thing happens in kirtan. Same thing happens in just hearing Srimad Bhagavatam's message. Of course, it's not that's available only in the 10th canto, the pastimes of Krishna canto, but it's in the whole of the Bhagavatam in different ways that we heard in our commentaries. But Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan are especially special, and his childhood pastimes are especially sweet, particularly for the parental affection candidates. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there is an example given for those that are inclined for the happiness of the elder gopas and gopis, is meditation upon the gestures, the movements of the eyebrows of Mother Jasoda, how she is dressed, the flowers in her hair, and all of these things. They're internal meditations called ragatmika bhaktas, and meditating on them in their various, what they do, those descriptions of the Bhagavatam are meditations, internal meditations for those that are in advanced stages of bhakti. Those that are not in advanced stages of bhakti, it's artificial to do like that, but just hearing leads to, for on our stage, leads to purification on one side and awakening of a dormant natural attraction for Krishna on the other side. So wherever one is on their trajectory of spiritual evolution, it's all beneficial. It's beneficial for the sinful people. It's beneficial for sadhakas, it's beneficial for spontaneous people, it's beneficial for prema bhakti people. It's all beneficial. So we're going to go to Canto 10, Chapter 8. I think we're just going to be discussing hearing and discussing one verse. I have the wrong book. Oh. I closed it. Okay, let me go. This is seeing their teeth. We said, read that?
The small teeth were visible.
Okay. Do you remember this? The word sma means a joy or wonder, astonishment. Do you remember that one? No? Okay, so that's 23. I think it's 23. I think it's 23. Okay, I'll read it, see if you remember it. Dressed with muddy earth mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. And when they went to their mothers, both Yashoda and Rohini picked them up with great affection, embraced them, and allowed them to suck the milk flowing from their breasts. While sucking the breast, the babies smiled, and their small teeth were visible. Their mothers, upon seeing those beautiful teeth, enjoyed great transcendental bliss. I didn't read that. Did I read that?
I heard.
You heard that?
Yeah.
I read that.
Visible.
Huh?
I think so, yes.
You think so? Okay.
I don't know if it may have been part of a commentary that included it.
That may be also. Yeah, I think so, because the previous one is their ankle bells jingled, and they heard others, and they followed them, and they realized it wasn't their mother and father, and so they ran back, fearful.
Yes.
That's what we discussed.
They launched off on a commentary that included
23. Okay, okay, okay. So, purport 23. As the mothers cared for their respective babies, by the arrangement of Yogamaya, the babies thought, here's my mother, And the mothers thought, here is my son. Because of affection, milk naturally flowed from the mother's breasts and the babies drank it. When the mothers saw small teeth coming in, they would count them and be happy. And when the babies saw their mothers allowing them to drink their breast milk, the babies also felt transcendental pleasure. As this transcendental affection continued between Rohini and Balaram and Yashoda and Krishna, they all enjoyed transcendental bliss. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the two mothers would take the two children in their arms and experience bliss. So this is parental affection. The two mothers took both children as their own, and the two children took both mothers as their own. Their breasts were flowing with milk in motherly affection. The dust on their bodies became beautiful, like cosmetics, and that dust increased their beauty, using the metaphor of sundare kim na sundaram. Someone who is beautiful, on someone who is beautiful, an ornament looks more beautiful. Mouth is in the singular, as each mother concentrated on the mouth of one child. They derive pleasure from seeing one or two small teeth in the innocent, smiling mouths. Jiva Goswami writes, their bodies shone, or shined, you know, shone, with mud and cosmetics. It is said, what is not beautiful in the Sundara Kanda of Ramayana? Similarly, here it is said, what is not beautiful in the infant boys? This follows the example, quote, a lotus becomes more beautiful when covered by Shaivala plants. This was the particular beauty of their infant age from that time onward. Each regarded the other's son as their own, Nija Sutau, and sometimes out of affection gave the other child their breast to feed him. Out of great bliss, they looked carefully in their children's mouths and felt the greatest pleasure because of their bliss. Quoting the ninth chapter, neither Lord Brahma nor Lord Shiva nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Lord, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. And the next verse of chapter 9, canto 10. Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service, but he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body the same as the self. And it ends, sma expresses joy or wonder. It's the transcendental emotion, and it's a transcendental, it's a secondary rasa, this wonder, like astonishment, just seeing their beauty. Sanatan Goswami writes, their sons were beautiful with the mud of Raja, which was like their cosmetics. Their actual cosmetics were covered by crawling in the mud. Nijasutau indicates their great affection for the boys. Looking intensely at their faces as they drank the milk eagerly, they derived bliss greater than the bliss of Brahman, They fed the boys, again it mentions this word sma, joy or wonder. They fed the boys with affection. Their mouths had 5 or 6 beautiful teeth seen when they smiled. And here's another commentary by Vishwanath. At the end of the day, you repeatedly show us your lotus face, covered with dark blue locks of hair and thickly powdered with dust. Thus, O hero, you arise desires in our mind. This is taken from this chapter 8. At the very end of the day, which has given us pain by long waiting, your lotus face is covered by black locks of hair hanging over your forehead, producing great beauty. This suggests the greatest natural beauty. That face is covered with dust from the cows. Dhana means wealth or many cows. Rajas also suggests the brightness of his face. Quoting this verse, this midday's verse, quote, dressed with muddy earth, mixed with cow dung and cow urine, the babies looked very beautiful. They describe him in this way to show that his cowherd dress acts as an udipan for the cowherd women, particularly. Parental affection is stimulated by the descriptions of his childhood pastimes and how he looked and how he was dressed and so on. This is the cause of their desire increasing generally. But in particular, by the end of the day, the end of the day gives rise to desire. And seeing his face covered by locks indicates arousal of intense desire. The meaning here is, quote, if you do not see him and enter the house, your desire will not be aroused. However, they see him continuously. As he comforts the cows, the elder gopis look at him again and again. This shows the increase of their desire. And, although being discreet, as they desire to control that desire, it becomes stronger. Desire spreads throughout their minds, for which there is no remedy. Smaran also suggests that Cupid agitates them by mere remembrance of him. Quote, you directly arouse that love. Unquote. This indicates Krishna's power. His capability is shown. Oh, Vira, oh hero, you have this power to attract us and others do not. This statement is made in anger, joking, and affection combined. This talking is another udipan of their love. They talk continually about thoughts of their love. Thinking, in separation of your evening dress, meant for enjoyment with us, our desire increases. Therefore, do not delay. In these two verses, the following is suggested. Quote, you always go away without fulfilling our desires. Our minds hold affection for you and are not indifferent, not without love. That desire in our minds is inspired by you and does not arise on its own. That desire is affectionate, not rough, since our affection is innate. You arouse desire in us, and we thus think of meeting you with a desire for association. But this is not a relation based on mutual exchange of affection. We are filled with affection, and you are filled with deceit. But but they can't help themselves. In Krama Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami writes, just two sentences, the description may not be chronological, since Shukadeva was absorbed in the pastimes when they gave their breasts for the two boys to drink. They looked towards their faces. Now there's some further references on this section from Preeti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami, quoting from chapter 47. This is Uddhava's visit to Vrindavan. As Uddhava was about to leave, Nanda and the others approached him, Uddhava, bearing various items of worship. With tears in their eyes, they addressed him as follows with anurag. And it's right in the verse, anurag. Anurag means ecstatic love. Because Uddhava reminded them of Krishna. Just seeing him, plus he came with the message of Krishna, so he's in double. And just to see him there feeling anurag. Jiva Goswami writes, this is Preeti Sandarbha, one should thus explain this passage according to their anurag, not according to Aishwarya Gyan Bhakti. Aishwarya Gyan Bhakti. Bhakti that's mixed with knowledge of his opulences. So there are pastimes where Krishna is exhibiting opulences and understanding his opulences are from him and so forth is one kind of knowledge, but there's no specific and with regard to Nanda offering gifts to Uddhava when he returns. It's the feelings of Nanda and the others is anurag. It is no Aishwarya at all. It's just they're feeling affection for Krishna. It's overwhelming them. For instance, the last verses should actually mean, quote, though we will never attain the good fortune of attaining him, may we always have rati for him, and may it never disappear, unquote. And when he speaks of repeated births, this is Nanda, it is in terms of having anurag each time. Thus, there must be another meaning to the incident, according to their pure vatsalya, since the word pada, in the next verse of this chapter, is suitably for misery, is suitable for misery and vatsalya because of separation at a great distance and the impossibility to attain him at the moment. In contrast to the great reverence for him as the Lord. So lotus feet has a reverential connotation and Nanda's not in a reverential, he's in a anurag mood. This is also seen in the Karuna Rasa of Chitraketu. So the Chitraketu, you know the story, King Chitraketu had a son that died because the co-wives, the queens, poisoned him. So he is very attached to his son, but not in the anurag manner, but in the, you know, the material attachment manner. So Aishwarya is not a material attachment, but it's more in the direction of material than the kind of love that Nanda had for Krishna. That's what's being explained, and it comes again. They offer respects to him, but this is not the meaning. The real meaning is, quote, my mind is always thinking of how he, as a son, using his body, would offer respects to me. This is Nanda's affection for his beloved son. There's no Aishwarya thing going on. Then comes some of this Acharya talk. The eight sattvika bhavas manifest in vatsalya, They're mentioned in Nectar Devotion. Mothers have a ninth. What's that? Milk flowing from their breast. The Vyabhacharis are well known, except probably to us, because what's a Vyabhachari Bhakti? These arise directly from Krishna's pastimes and from pastimes of Aishwarya, produced by his Leela Shakti. Here's an example. Impatience, taken from this chapter 8. Dear Krishna, why are you so restless that you have eaten dirt in a solitary place? This complaint has been lodged against you by all your playmates, including your elder brother, Balaram. How is this? That's Aishwarya, impatience. Here's an example of surprise and worry. These are other Vyabhicharis. Two are in this chapter. When Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Mother Yashoda, she saw within his stomach all moving and non-moving entities. Bhuva, loka, and all directions, along with mountains, islands, oceans, the surface of the earth, the wind, fire, the moon, and the stars. He has a big mouth. The stai is vatsalya. So there's stimulations of the steady ecstasy, stai bhava, and that results in vatsalya. Next verse in this chapter, text 23, we're discussing 23. The two mothers saw their sons, beautiful with mud and cosmetics, in their arms, and gave them their breasts and fed them. Looking carefully at the mouths of their sucking children, they became joyful on seeing small teeth when the boys smiled softly. So stimulations for parental affection. Another reference, Jiva Goswami again, another Anuchet from Priti Sandarbha. Referring again to chapter 47, this is Uddhava's visit to Vrindavan. As Uddhava was about to leave, Nanda and the others approached him, bearing various items of worship. With tears in their eyes, they addressed him as follows. So, now it's going to go back to those verses, but for now it's just explaining. In these verses, it is seen that Nanda and Yashoda are filled with anurag, ecstatic love for Lord Krishna. Their devotion to the Lord is not in the mood of awe and veneration, the mood of appreciating Lord Krishna's supreme power and opulence. Here Uddhava thinks, quote, although I am far from attaining this kind of good fortune, I still pray that someday I will attain this kind of ecstatic love. I pray this love will not be denied to me. With a voice choked with emotion, Uddhava prays in this way, praying that in some other lifetime he may someday attain this kind of anurag, ecstatic love. Uddhava says, same chapter 47 comment, whenever, this is quote translation, wherever we are made to wander about this world by the Supreme Lord's will, in accordance to the reactions of our fruitive work, may our good works and charity always grant us love for Krishna. The prior verse can, in Srimad Bhagavatam chapter 47, may be interpreted in two ways. It may be interpreted to refer to Vatsalya Rasa alone, or it may also be interpreted to refer to other rasas also. Here, the phrase beginning with the word pada, or taking shelter of Krishna's feet, is considered appropriate in Vatsalya Rasa because Nanda Maharaj feels great anguish that he cannot associate with Krishna, who has gone to a faraway country. A similar situation in Karuna Rasa is seen in the story of Maharaj Chitraketu. I don't understand all these Sanchari and etc. So don't ask me. Now the Sanchari Bhavas will be considered. There's two of them that are mentioned. You know, from this section, actually, a Sanchari Bhava with parental affection. Those born from the pastimes which Lord Krishna directly performs, and to those born from the pastimes of power and opulence manifest with the aid of Lord Krishna's pastime potency. The first of these is seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8, text 34 of this canto. Dear Krishna, why are you so restless that you have eaten dirt in a solitary place? This complaint has been lodged against you by all your playmates, including your elder brother, Balaram. How is this? And the next verse reads, this is an example of Krishna's restlessness. The second of these Sanchari Bhavas, that is, those pastimes of power and opulence, manifest with the aid of Lord Krishna's pastime potency, that's the second category, is seen in these words, 10.8.37. So, sneak preview of what's coming in the chapter. When Krishna opened his mouth wide by the order of Mother Yashoda, she saw within his mouth a lot of things. All moving and non-moving entities, outer space, all directions, along with mountains, islands, oceans, the surface of the earth, the blowing wind, fire, the moon, and stars. She saw the planetary systems, water, light, air, sky, and creation by transformation of Ahankara. She also saw the senses, the mind, sense perception, and the three qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance. She saw the time allotted for the living entities. She saw natural instinct and the reactions of karma. And she saw desires and different varieties of bodies moving and non-moving. Seeing all these aspects of the cosmic manifestation, along with herself and Vrindavan Dham, she became doubtful and fearful of her son's nature. In this passage, this is the last sentence for this class. In this passage, it is seen Mother Yashoda's wonder and doubt. Here, the Stayi Bhava is Vatsalya Rasa. So, this section is a very appreciated section for those that are attracted to Krishna's childhood pastimes, particularly in the parental affection mood. The nature, rasa is the movement. You know that example of an axle and the wheels. So the axle is the stayi bhava, and there's something that moves the axle, turns the axle. That's the stimulations for ecstatic love. So when, by hearing, or in their case, by seeing and participating, interacting with Krishna, they couldn't help themselves. Their ecstatic love increased. And if they tried to contain or conceal those ecstatic feelings, the ecstatic feelings just became bigger and stronger. You know, the science of rasa is, it doesn't conform to material, but material resembles or is a reflection of the spiritual rasa. And without the unwanted part. It's nice to talk about. I mean, misery of material existence is always given derogatory connotation, as well as, you know, experiencing it. And then in hearing about the pain of separation to the point of going mad, that doesn't sound very nice. That sounds like I better stay away from Krishna because I might have to have those kinds of emotions that sound really bad. So one is stuck, and such a person then may turn to impersonal because I don't want to have those negative feelings. But those negative feelings we heard, and hearing it again, they're not, it's an ecstasy. Now, how can a negative feeling be an ecstasy? That's double talk. It increases one's affection for Krishna, and as increases one's affection for Krishna increases, it's an ecstasy, because he's ecstatic by his very nature. It's certainly a mystery. By material yardsticks, it's just mumbo jumbo and contradictions, and you know, people are silly. But if one doesn't have that disposition towards Krishna and Krishna tattva, then hearing these explanations, it's wonderful. Certainly it's mystical, but it's very, very wonderful. Like, for example, something that's very wonderful is when Krishna was born in the prison house of Kamsa, he was Vasudeva Krishna, and just in a flash, he became a little baby. And then he's a little baby. This is pastime of being a little baby. Then he starts to grow. And as he starts to grow, there's demons that come to kill him. And his showing of his wonderful feature to the residents in Vrindavan, and then his little childhood. So he has no material form, and he doesn't grow like we grow, our bodies grow from a baby, etc., etc. Dehi no smanyata dehe. It's not like that. But his body takes on a feature to correspond to the love of the elder gopas and gopis to fulfill to the fullest their ecstatic love for Krishna according to their mood of love. And as they're feeling that mood of love, he's feeling the same mood of love. They're feeling this is my son, and he's feeling this is my mother and father. Although he has no mother and father. It's actually his enjoyment results in their enjoyment, not the other way around. And that's the science of rasa. And they have that qualification that their only shelter is Krishna. Although they're the parents, they have parental affection. Krishna is their shelter, and they just don't feel the same. They and the other residents of Vrindavan don't feel the same affection towards their own children as they feel towards Krishna. There's no other entity that stimulates that love. And therefore, their understanding is, it's he stimulating their love. It's not there's something innate within me, but he is stimulating my love by his arrangements. Now, to the degree to which they understand him as being the source of that potency that stimulates their love, doesn't say. But that's the notion. They can't live without him. Not like they're, you know, happiness addicts, but their feeling of love is so strong and compelling, they can't live without him for even a moment. We have some semblance of that in this world. Let's just keep it really simple. And when you're having a good time, time flies. And when you're disturbed, or let's say, you know, you're waiting for a bus, you know, time moves really slowly.
Yep.
Time, the perception, time doesn't change. It moves according to measure. But our feeling of how swiftly time is moving may change. So what to speak then of timelessness? It's total absorption. So what do we understand about totally anything? But total absorption leads them to the place where Krishna subordinates himself to them. Now that exists even in Vaikuntha. Let's just using the expression of Vishnu, Shiradakshe Vishnu, Durvasa Muni, where Vishnu says, I have no independence. I'm completely dependent upon my devotees. So if you want something, you have to go to them. If they say, then that's all it takes. If they don't say, then nothing can happen. So you better go to them. He has absolute independence. He has absolute independence. And he submits himself fully unto those who have pure devotion like Ambarish, and so he's relinquished his independence by volition. So I can't do anything without their permission. Totally submissive to his devotees. And that's why Kuntha would to speak of Braja. And what to speak of the residents of Braja in their regard for Krishna. In contrast to the residents of Vaikuntha and their regard for the Lord of Vaikuntha, or Maharaj Ambarish and his regard for Lord Vishnu. It's a lovely topic. It's a big mystery from a worldly perspective, for sure. And it won't be understood by empiric reasoning. Won't be understood that way. We can get a directional, notional idea about that's about it. And it's to have some degree of realization. It's all dependent upon bhakti. And bhakti has its, you know, dependencies. Good, starting with good association, regular association, and the activities of hearing and chanting and so on. To cleanse and restore original consciousness. Before I started this section or this system that I've been using, I didn't know how it was going to work. It's just kind of been experimental. But the section is so important. I mean, the whole of the 10th canto is so important that the meaningful commentaries by your acharyas, it just brings to life the same simple messages that if we read it, it would just kind of like, that's nice, and go on to the next one. Okay, so let's see if there's some comments or discussion on this little section.
I had this question a few months ago when I was reading the second canto. It's about the Virat Rupa.
It's about?
The Virat Rupa.
Okay.
So I remember at one point it was saying that Virat Rupa is a material form and it's not found in the spiritual world. Is that correct or am I?
The language that Prabhupada, yes. The language that Prabhupada uses to describe Virat Rupa, like the Virat Rupa, it's also mysterious, and his language is mysterious. Because the form is a real form. And the Virat Rupa is called illusory. Although it's a real form. It's illusory in the sense that now you see it, now you don't. But not like, you know, Krishna withdraws his pastime from Vrindavan, but his pastime is eternally going on. You just can't see them because he withdrew his prakat form of pastimes. It's not quite like that. It has to do with the relationship of matter and spirit, not spirit that's manifest and spirit that's withdrawn. It's the relationship between matter and spirit, and it's not easy to understand in our present state of consciousness because our present state of consciousness is very influenced by Maya. And when you're Maya covered, then you're not going to understand transcendence. So it strikes the heart as this is contradictory. And, you know, feelings of uncertainty and doubt and apprehension and, you know, holding back. Well, what is it anyways? If it's material, why is it even in the Bhagavatam? If it's material, why is it the first topic that Sukadeva Goswami speaks about in Canto 2? And what does it mean that if it does say it's material, what does it mean when it says it's material? It's not disconnected from Krishna because it's one of Krishna's forms. So what does it mean that it's material? Well, material, one way, is material in terms of asat, temporary. Now you see it, now you don't. It's temporary. But it's a real form. There's a verse in the third canto, I can't remember which chapter, where it says in every night of Brahma, there's several things that happen. As it's approaching nightfall, there's 36,000 years, you know, earthly years, solar years, of drought, then 36,000 years of fire, then 36,000 years of flood. So before you have the fire, you have to make things dried out. They get dried out from drought, and then fire for 36,000 years. And then the Garbhadak ocean rises. And so the Virat Rupa is almost fully immersed in water, with the exception of Brahma. And Brahma has his night, he goes to sleep. But during his sleep, he's dreaming, Yoga Nidra. And he's dreaming of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, who's within the Garbhadak ocean. And this terminology, listen carefully, the terminology of Garbhadaksha Vishnu and Virat Rupa is in this stage interchangeable. He is taking dictation from Garbhadaksha Vishnu how to take this impression that's in his subtle body, his mind. The explanation is given. It's just like when you're asleep at night, your mind may go. Your body's there, lying on the bed or whatever, but your mind may go somewhere. And then when you wake up, it comes back. Or just before you wake up, it comes back. So in his mind, Brahma's mind, there's meditation on and taking instruction from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And this means also Virat Rup. So when the nighttime is over and the day begins, he starts his creation business again exactly according to the plan of the Virat Rup given to him during the night. He knows what to do, how to do it, etc. So it's not an imaginary form in the literal sense of just imagine it. It's imaginary in a different sense, or material in a different sense. It's one of Krishna's forms, dealing with the creation. That's the universal form. It's not an easy subject to understand. It's not an easy subject to describe, so it's understandable. But because that comes up, what Mother Jasoda sees inside Krishna's mouth, we're going to have to go over it a bit. Yeah.
A follow-up question was that I think in the commentaries it was described that each part of the Virat Rupa represented like some loka, like Patal Lok or his
name. It wasn't in this section, it's in other sections of descriptions of. It's in Canto 2, later parts of Canto 2. Go ahead.
So is it just a way of describing those parts? Or?
Yes. But it's not just notional. That's the universal form. And you know, to make things a little more complicated than they already are, there's different perspectives of the same thing. That's human. I mean, and you know, the Bhagavatam is for humans. It's there's different perspectives on the same thing. So that's one of the multiple perspectives on the universal form. And you know, what you just said is described in the Bhagavatam, and then in the next set of verses, it's another one of the pictures. The next set of verses, another one of the pictures. It's not a different entity. It's not like mumbo jumbo. It's just different perspectives on the same entity.
Maharaj, I have a question about the rasas, different rasas. So, is it that the Madhurya rasa is the highest and the Vatsalya or the Sakya rasa are lower than Madhurya rasa?
Well, what do you mean higher and lower?
Like they are greater devotees in...
No.
Conjugal love?
No. That's the wrong understanding of higher and lower. But, you know, there are the language of Rupa Goswami goes, you know, perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So do we say, well, you know, Mother Jasoda's nice, but you know, she's not one of the young gopis. She's got parental affection, so she's nice. We don't do that. That's offensive. So we don't do that. She's perfect. So the distinction of rasa that's given by Rupa Goswami is whatever is in the previous rasa is there in the next rasa plus, and whatever is in that rasa is included in the next rasa plus. So there's just some dimension or feature of that rasa that's not in the prior rasa. Or the sequentially evolving rasas.
I had one more. Can I ask? Yesterday you said that you were mentioning about fickleness.
I'm measuring
fickleness.
Fickleness.
Krishna being fickle.
Ah.
Yeah, and that that's a good quality of his pinching of the children passing urine. So I don't understand that.
What don't you understand about it?
Like, I understand that he didn't get what he wanted in those homes, so that is why this is how he reacted. But? I still don't understand the pinching of the children and passing urine and stool.
Why would he do that?
Why would he do that?
Why would he steal? And when he stole, how was it regarded? They would sometimes come to Mother DeSoto's house to complain. Your son is doing these things. And when they came to complain, it wasn't like, you know, your neighbor is having a wild party and you call the police. Or go to your neighbor and bang on the door and, you know, you better stop this or I'm going to call the police. Or something. It's not like that kind of complaining. It's affection. They have affection, but they're exhibiting their, as they would bring these concerns, they were laughing. And as they talked about it, their affection for Krishna just grew and grew and they forgot everything and left. And, you know, it was jolly. Including the pinching, including the stealing, including the everything. Now, those are not nice things, passing stool and urine and pinching. But they're love for Krishna. So Krishna would take it, you could say, take it to the edge. And it was still, you know, their affection is so strong. They loved it. They loved it. Now, who's going to love having their child pinched or having somebody come and pass stolen urine in their floor? But it's, you know, here's it. How can mothers love their children when they make messes and pass stolen urine? They have to wipe up the stolen urine and they cry and... You know, how can mothers love that? Mothers love that. I mean, those that aren't mothers don't love that. Like, how can, you know, I'm staying away from this. I'm going to take sannyas. But mothers love it. So, you know, sannyasis, you know, can't get their head around how mothers love it. But mothers love it. So then this is transcendental, not just motherhood. This is transcendental motherhood. And so it's naughty. It's bad behavior. You don't do stuff like this. You know, like, don't do stuff like, but, you know, they don't go to Krishna and shake their finger. They come to Mother DeSoto and they laugh. They start, like, you know, the motions move to, and Krishna knows what he's doing. I mean, it's just like we're hearing, he's not play acting. A nice example. Mother Queen Kunti speaking about Krishna being afraid of the stick in Mother Jasoda's hands. He's not play acting. If he was play acting, it's okay, that's really easy to understand. Okay, she wants to be, you know, so I'll cry. Boo hoo. And that's easy to understand. He's just an actor on a stage. But he's actually afraid. Seeing this little stick. He who just like KO'd Kamsa, you know, little stick. And he's afraid. He's crying. His whole body is shaking and his earrings are moving to and fro and trembling. He's feeling fear. Of that little stick and mother, so she sees the fear, she throws the stick away. So it's not play acting. When he's seeing these mothers, Yasoda and Rohini, they're feeling and he's feeling. He's enjoying that feeling of their parental affection. He's enjoying and he's feeling those feelings. And sometimes he's naughty with Mother Yasoda, like little children will be with their mothers. You know, other people may not know what little children, naughty things they do with their mothers, but mothers know, and you know. But he was doing with those feelings of love, and she was loving his, you know, pulling her earrings and things that little children do, not for to be nasty, just playing, and she loved it. You know, holding the churning rod, so she couldn't churn the butter, and he's got a tight grip. She couldn't move the churning rod, but she knew what it meant, and she just dropped the rope and did what mothers do when they, you know, what their child wants. So it wasn't play acting. That's the biggest part of the mystery. So back to the, you know, passing stool and urine and pinching the babies. It's affection exhibited towards his devotees in a very special way. And it wasn't just Mother Yasoda, it was like the elder gopis. He would go to their homes and do his mischief to stimulate their love. And the monkeys, and break the butter pots, and if there was nothing, that he would do some other mischief, and then run away, as if afraid. It's a transcendental lila. If children of this were to do, this is bad, and if Krishna does, it's delightful. Anything else?
There's no online. I have.
Okay.
I have two questions. In the universal form, that description, the last part that you read, and it's from the verse, translation of the verse in the by Prabhupada, she saw things like three qualities of goodness, passion and ignorance, natural instinct, time. Of is hard to conceive. But what is that? Is it similar to seeing Brahma, seeing Krishna with each of those Vishnu forms and the personified three modes of nature, the personified Kala?
It's very clear with what Brahma saw. It was personified. The Shaktis were personified. But that's in the spiritual dimension. Narayana with his spiritual Shaktis, they're personified. This is the material, this is the Virat Roop. So, I don't know what it means. Although I think it's not the personified Shaktis, it's the reflection of those in this realm, all within her. What it looked like, I don't know. And we're reading our Acharya's commentaries, and they're not saying. At least, maybe when we get there, it'll say in the commentaries. Maybe it'll say what it looked like. What's that? What else?
So this is contemplating the point about stimulation, that how Krishna does things to stimulate the love of his parents and our elder gopis. So as a father, there are things that the children do that does stimulate, you know, of course stimulates anger sometimes, but also stimulates, you know, feelings of affection and just wanting to tap their head, whatever, you know, that which is material, and it's I assume a reflection of this spiritual aspect that we're reading about.
Yes.
And then my thoughts are going to, you know, knowing that Krishna is kind and loving and merciful in our conditioned and covered state, what are some ways that Krishna is trying to stimulate our love? Is it just this hearing, offering opportunities to associate with sadhus?
Well, and then it's the application of what you have heard. The application of the consciousness that's been awakened after having hearing. That is to say, for example, when you're interacting with your children, you'll see them differently. The same gesture, the same words, etc., the same food, the consciousness behind will be different. Because of, so it's, it, and that's, well, that consciousness of Krishna flows into all the other worldly activities of life that are otherwise material because of forgetfulness. And so as consciousness matures, spiritual consciousness matures, then all of one's daily activities in this world become spiritualized also. The practical application of the messages and the consciousness awakened by those messages. You know, take a little example, how Prabhupada associated with his disciples. Or for that matter, just like in that Hare Krishna movie, his youngest son speaks with affection, although his father left home. And, you know, his words were, it was a shock. But, you know, it wasn't a disdain kind of shock. It was with affection kind of shock. At least, you know, today. Who knows what it was during that time. And then Prabhupada, this little voice in the background of Prabhupada saying, take care of your mother and the family affairs. So that's an instruction, and staying with the instruction. So even in the course of ordinary activity, Krishna consciousness can carry forward through the same gestures, the same spoken words, the same behaviors, can carry a, you know, a Krishna conscious content or vibration or impact. It's not just the hearing. It's then what flows from that, the application of that. That takes purity to live that way. So I think we're done, because we normally have a whole bunch of online questions, and maybe people weren't ready for the midday class.
It's probably part of it. There's a question here.
Okay.
It's from Priya Kishori Mataji. We make a mistake and repeat the same mistake again.
Mm-hmm.
How to get strength to not repeat the same mistake again?
Balaram. Pray to Balaram. He gives strength. Okay.
One more?
Yeah.
This is from Ram Sharan Prabhu. Why the universal form is not considered spiritual, though it was shown by the Lord personally to Yashoda and Arjun?
It's not considered spiritual in the sense that it's temporary, although it is a spiritual form. I'll say it again. It's considered material in the sense that it's not eternally manifest, although it is Krishna's form, so therefore it's a spiritual form, but it's considered material in this sense. Now you see it, now you don't. Here's proof that it's spiritual. By meditation upon the universal form, one's consciousness becomes purified such that one can then begin to better understand and meditate upon Bhagavan feature. So it's spiritual. And we use the word material in that sense that I repeated twice. Okay, Prabhupada ki.